We are going to be in Matthew chapter 23 today. This is by far the harshest sermon that Jesus ever preached. Not a sermon really, but just he's just going to lambaste the Pharisees. And after the reading, we're going to watch a little scene from The Chosen to kind of to fix that. Anger is not a bad emotion. Anger is a dangerous emotion in the hand of sinners. But anger is God-given, you know, and there's righteous indignation, and there's purposes for anger. But every time Jesus was angry, it was for a righteous cause, and it was for somebody else, not some kind of selfish, self-centered thing. Our reading is going to be in John chapter 9. It's fairly short. But we're looking at these Pharisees, blind guides, he'll call them. And again, blindness, spiritual blindness is pride. So in John chapter 9, Jesus heals this blind man, right? The whole chapter is on that, just that incident where he heals him. And all the people around him, the Pharisees are up in a huff about it because he did it on the Sabbath and all this stuff. And then the people know that if they claim Jesus to be a prophet or something good, that they'll get kicked out of the synagogue. You probably know the story. They ask the guys, this guy's parents, and they're all, oh, he's of age, ask him. You know, they're nervous. And he's just like, man, he just got his eyesight, so he's not fearing any horizontal attack. And it's just a great read. It's comedic. It's comical. Because they ask him, tell us again how this happened. Do you want to become his disciples? You know, he starts mocking them, and it's just pretty classic. And they're all up in arms. And I know my books in the Bible. I can't find John from John Wesley when I'm trying to talk and do it at the same time. But I made it to John 14, so I'm on track here. John chapter 9, we're only going to read the end of it. Because the end of it seems like a riddle. It's kind of like a riddle what Jesus says, but it's spelled out that if you know you're blind, just like if you know you need a doctor, Jesus came for the sick, not the wealthy. If I know that I'm spiritually blind without him, then I can be saved. But I think I know everything that I'm blind, and that's what we'll see here in our reading. So John chapter 9, verses 35 to 40, that's just the last part. And I'll read the even numbers with you, but I'll read the odd by myself. So the guy was kicked out of the synagogue. And another beautiful thing, I guess, I can't help myself, but first they ask him, who killed you? He says, a man, in verse 10. And then down in verse 17, a prophet. And then when he meets him, he calls him Lord, and he realizes it. Jesus, you know, so Jesus finds him a second time. He's kicked out of the synagogue, and here in verse 35, here we go. Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, do you believe in the Son of God? He answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, you have both seen him, and it is he who is talking with you. Then he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. And Jesus said, for judgment I have come into this world, that those who do not see may see, and that those who see may be made blind. Then some of the Pharisees who were with him heard these words and said to him, are we blind also? And Jesus said to them, if you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say, we see, therefore your sin remains. So I hope that makes sense as we... The blindness is the pride that I don't need a Savior. And that's what we see in our text in Matthew 23. It's all in a flow with what we've already seen. Jesus rides in on the donkey, and they're proclaiming him Messiah, and the Pharisees are having, and the leaders are just in a huff about it, telling them to tell them to be quiet. And he says, if they keep quiet, then the rocks would cry out the truth, you know. And then he clears the temple. He just cleanses the temple. He's turning over tables and driving animals out of there because the people, the leaders were using the feast day to rip people off, saying, your animal has some blemishes here, we'll sell you one. Well, how much is your animal? $500,000, I'm exaggerating, but not by much. They're just ripping people off. The money changers, just like when you go to another country, you got to switch your money out. They were ripping people off that way too. And Jesus saw through all that and was calling them out. And again, when he does that in John chapter 2, that's the beginning of his ministry. This is 3 years later. He does it at the beginning and the end of his ministry. And then, anyway, I won't get into all the detail. There's more that follows, but it leads us to where we are now, to where the Pharisees just want to kill him, but they can't because they're afraid of the crowds. And now this is going to be, well, number one on your sheet. This is Jesus. I forgot the numbers. I just realized that. This is Jesus finally. This is, okay, Kevin, slow down. This is Jesus' final public address. He is careful to call out the Pharisees and warn his disciples and the crowd to beware of these wolves. So that's the word wolves. So this is his last public address, so to speak. He's only a few days from dying on the cross for us and for them, for the whole world, to pay the price so that we can be with him forever in heaven and not in hell. And so that we can live a life down here, difficult as it may be, but with a companion of friendship with God, you know, and just that, and to be one with him and each other. So here we go. Chapter 23, we're going to read a bit here. I'll make a couple comments after a few verses, then we'll make our way through chapter verse 12. So then Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, both, and the Pharisees are right there listening. And he says to them, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do. But do not do according to their works, for they say and do not do. You know, like they tell us as parents, you know, or we as parents can sometimes, because I said so, and there's a place for that, but not do as I say, not as I do, because all of us as parents know that our kids don't do what we say, they do what we do, and they copy us, you know. And these guys are, they're just hypocrites. So they sit in the seat of Moses. That means they interpret the law, they represent the law, they you know, and again, a scribe, most scribes were Pharisees, but the scribes are the ones that would copy the law. And we're thankful for the detail. They're very legalistic and they go off board here, but they were very detailed. And, you know, if they messed up one little thing, they would tear up the whole scroll and go wash and take a bath or something and start over. But because of them, we have, besides, what do you call that, translation errors, we have the accurate, you know, book years later. So that's a good thing. And the Pharisees were the back to the Bible people before Jesus came, but they just became legalistic. They relied on their own resources, and it went all went sideways, if you will. They became legalistic. Paul says in Galatians, to the Galatians, having begun in the Spirit, why are you now trying to be made perfect in your own effort, in the flesh? And that's what happens with when I try to do it on my own or feel like I've got to come up with some special rules and now I got to impose these rules on you, then it just all goes south. And that's what the deal was with the Pharisees. And he says they say and do not do according to their works. They don't, they're hypocrites. And by the way, the word hypocrite means actor, literally. It means they're acting, they're faking it. So verse 4, and he's going to give examples of this. They bind heavy burdens, hard to bear, and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. Remember that scene where Jesus is with his disciples and they're hungry and they're picking grain because they're hungry on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees get all over Jesus. They're breaking the Sabbath. Ridiculous, you know. He cares about human need. God never gave the Sabbath for something to make it harder. He says himself, man was not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for man. The Lord rested on the seventh day, and he wants us to rest. And again, and even that, people turn into a rule, you know. That's not a rule for us. You know, don't do anything. Don't watch any sports today, or don't That's not the point. It's he wants us to rest. As the one person put it, as Christians, we don't have a Sabbath day. We have a Sabbath life. Now, it is wise, and I'm pining for this. My wife and I are getting closer and closer to this. Tomorrow, well, I'm not going to say where we're going tomorrow, but we have some time, some private time to pray. And then next week, Lord willing, we might even get to go a little bit more private, but we'll see. It's just, it's a good thing, you know. But anyway, that's an example of, yeah, and you've heard the stories are true. As time went on, they would make rules like if you had a prosthesis, a wooden leg, you couldn't use that on the Sabbath because that's carrying a burden. How ridiculous is that? And now the person has to hop around on one foot. It's just, it's that's, and that's the lunacy. It's like our friend, Pastor Bruce in Boone used to say when we went to his church, and this was many years ago now, he'd say it's either Jesus or insanity. And now how much more do we see that in our world? It's either Jesus or insanity. Verse 5, but all their works they do to be seen by men. And I think they're doing it for a show. Matthew, the Sermon on the Mount talks about that with prayer, right? They pray to be seen by men. They make this big show about it. They make their phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. The phylactery is that, I'm going to read the verse that this comes from, one of the verses in Deuteronomy. And this is beautiful instruction from the Lord. You know this, you've heard it, but then they instead of the spiritual meaning, they make it a physical meaning. So this is Deuteronomy 6:6-9. And these words which I command you today shall be in your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your children, and shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. And here it is right here, verse 8. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates. So they would take that literally, and they would make these boxes that they'd put on their wrists or on their foreheads that had verses in them, which that's fine. But then they got carried away, and the bigger the box, the more spiritual you were, right? And the thing about the garment, where it says here in verse 5, enlarge the borders of the garment. It's like the hem of his robe that the woman with the issue of blood, she said, if I could just touch the hem of Jesus' garment, it was that thing, that ribbon or whatever, that represented, you know, God's authority. But this is now new numbers. Sorry, I couldn't get this to where I needed to get it, but Numbers 15:38-40. Speak to the children of Israel. Tell them to make tassels on the corners of their garments throughout their generations, to put a blue thread in the tassels of the corners. So that's what that was about, that woman wanted to touch, you know. And you shall have that tassel. I don't know why this speaks to me, but I love it. It doesn't sound... I'll just read it and see what you think. This is verse 39. And you shall have the tassel that you may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord and do them, and that you may not follow the harlotry to which your own heart and your own eyes are inclined. I'm just glad the Lord knows that about me, you know, and knows that about us, and knows that about everybody. We're all the same, you know. And that's the ironic thing about these Pharisees are fully living out this harlotry and greed and hypocrisy, and they're so spiritually blind that they think that they're serving God, you know. And then he says there in that passage, and that you may remember to do all my commands and to be holy for your God, because I delivered you from Egypt, you know. So in that this is where they have it backwards. And we're not going to break down every verse. This is all I have to read to you. So other than just the Kevin Wilson, what flies in my head and out of my mouth, and hopefully in a linear enough manner here. So the next thing, number 6, they love the best places at feasts and the best seats in the synagogues, greetings in the marketplace. And I forgot to do the video. Were you guys able to pull that up? Okay, yeah. I'll pause at some point. Well, we haven't gotten to the woe part. So before we get to the woe part, we'll show you the video. If you haven't seen this on the Chosen. The best seats in the synagogues, greetings in the marketplace, and to be called by men, rabbi, teacher, or master is what that means. But you do not be called rabbi. He's talking to his disciples now, to you and me. For one is your teacher, the Christ, and you are all brethren. Do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your father, he who is in heaven. That doesn't mean don't go home to your dad and stop calling him father. It's not like that. It's just in the sense of this setting as believers, you know, this exaltation, the most holy father, you know, things like that. We used to, a friend of ours, back in the school of ministry, Sammy, a good friend of ours, he's originally from Egypt, godly guy. We would joke with each other, Reverend. We'd call each other Reverend just as a joke. It doesn't matter. You're welcome to call me Pastor, but you can call me Kevin. Don't call me late for supper, all that kind of thing. You're all brethren. Don't call me. Okay, verse 10, and do not be called teachers, for one is your teacher, the Christ. Again, there's the gift of the Spirit is pastor, teacher. It's one of the gifts of the Spirit, but not in the sense of an exalted kind of a thing. You know, we're all in the work of the ministry. We can all learn from each other. And so number two on your sheet there is, or the second one there, we must check our motives as we minister. The word minister means, anyone? The word minister means servant. It literally means servant. And the reference there, Mark, it's also in Matthew, I think in Luke, where Jesus says, Mark 10:25, even the Son of Man, speaking of himself, did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many. So it's all about humility and serving in heaven. It says there in Luke chapter 12, Jesus says, if you're one of those waiting at the door, like have a heart that can't wait for me to come, basically, I'll have you sit down at that time later. That's either the millennium or the forever after. Either way sounds good to me. He says of himself that he'll gird himself and have those servants sit down and he'll serve them. So Jesus is always gentle and humble in heart, always a servant, and so is the Father. Anything else is just from the sin and the devil, the pride, and the position, the org chart, let me be the top dog and all that kind of stuff. That's all Pharisee stuff, and that's all pride of life, which is a part of our flesh, our old nature that we still carry around like that dead man. And he goes on to say, and whoever exalts himself, did I read in verse 11, but he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. And whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. So I forgot, this is a 2.5 minute clip we're going to watch from the show, The Chosen. I will be a Pharisee here a little bit. It's wonderful and shows the passion of Jesus. It's in the movie and the show, it's done earlier before he's, that last week of his life, but it still depicts it very well. So righteous indignation. So yeah, a lot of that is in our text here. So the third one on your sheet, woe here, W-O-E, means what sorrow awaits you, or destruction is certain. It's a warning. And Jesus loved the Pharisees, you know. Saul of Tarsus might have been in this crowd still. Joseph of Arimathea, possibly Nicodemus, and others, it would say later in the book of John that others believed him, but they were afraid to confess it because they feared man more than God. But, maybe they were on their way to true faith. So here we go. He says this 8 times, woe to you. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, verse 13, for you shut up the kingdom of heaven against men, for you neither go in yourselves, nor do you allow those who are entering to go in. Obviously, Jesus is the way to heaven, and they wouldn't get baptized by John. In the last chapter, 2 chapters ago, they're trying to trip him up on where to get his authority, and they're not honoring John. They can't say anything good about John, because then they'd have to say something good about Jesus. But they're blocking the way. Verse 14, woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you devour widows' houses, and for a pretense make long prayers. Therefore, you will receive the greater condemnation. They're ripping off widows. Their husband dies. They have a will, but then here come the Pharisees and whatever way they want to manipulate to rip them off. And that still happens today. A lot, television evangelists, people, scammers, what do they call those? Fishers, people, people calling and phony balonies. As a therapist, I have a clientele. Part of my clientele are people, young adults that are either have intellectual disability or autism. And these scammers call them, these supposed lady, they're real or some, just an image of that, and flirt with these guys and try to ask them for gift cards or money. And these people that are lonely don't know any better. And so that's Satan, right? That's the devil. And that's who's working in these Pharisees, just phony. So that's what he's again, letting them have it in front of the crowd and in front of the disciples so that they know that these are wolves. And verse 15, woe to you scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you travel land and sea to win one proselyte. And when he is won, you make him twice as much a son of hell as yourself. A proselyte would be a Gentile that is fond of the Jewish faith, that wants to know more about it. That they also were called God-fearers. If you see that in your Bible, that's a Gentile that was part of the gang there in the synagogue. But if the Pharisees got a hold of him and converted him to their doctrine, twice as much a son of hell, sometimes the proselyte would be just so more gung-ho than the Pharisee. And it's much like the cults for us. A person that's a drunk or a thief or whatever has better chance of being saved than someone that's been indoctrinated in a false religion. And that's what he's saying here. So this is all applicable to here and now, not just back then. Woe to you, getting the right place here. Verse 16. I'm going to read 16 through 22. This one we're going to read through. Woe to you blind guides, who say whoever swears by the temple is nothing, but whoever swears by the gold of the temple, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, and that word fools means moron, literally. For which is greater, the gold or the temple that sanctifies the gold? And whoever swears by the altar, it is nothing, but whoever swears by the gift that is on it, he is obliged to perform it. Fools and blind, for which is greater, the gift or the altar that sanctifies the gift? Therefore, he who swears by the altar swears by it and by all things on it. He who swears by the temple swears by it and by him who dwells in it. And he who swears by heaven swears by the throne of God and him who sits on it. So two things here that I as I understand it, is the Pharisees had their own little secret code, if you will. I make a promise, but my fingers are crossed. You know, I can swear by this or that, but it's not binding. I don't have to hold to it. But then their greed comes in and saying, but if you swear by the gift or by the gold, you know, and they were very greedy, and it was a way to manipulate people. Just like today, again, people are in ministry, and it can be, you know, because of our flesh, the lust of the eyes, that'd be greed. The lust of the flesh, that we know what that is, and then the pride of life. Just, I'm the pastor here. You need to listen to me, or whatever. That's where they're going, because they are not following the Holy Spirit. Obviously, they're way off course, and that's why he's really letting them have it. So then we get to verse 23. Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have neglected the weightier matters of the law. And what are those? Justice and mercy and faith. These you ought to have done without leaving the others undone. Kind of like we saw on the little clip here. It's again majoring on the minors and on the legalistic stuff and not the things of the heart. They didn't give a rip about the people. They were lording things over them. There was a certain, I don't know if it's the Essenes, I heard from one pastor that there was a certain group that wouldn't even come to Jerusalem because they just saw how phony the Pharisees were. And so then Jesus goes on, he just hammers them more and more. Blind guides, again, spiritual pride, blindness. Blind guides who strain out a gnat and swallow a camel, again, majoring on the minors, but not on what's important. Woe to you, verse 25, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you cleanse the outside of the cup and dish, but inside they are full of extortion and self-indulgence. Blind Pharisee, first cleanse the inside of the cup and dish. I think I said that wrong. You cleanse the outside, but cleanse the inside of the cup and dish, and the outside of them may be clean. That's very much the same. That was Chuck Smith's testimony. Before this revival happened, he had become the pastor of a small church called Calvary Chapel, Newport Beach, because the pastor retired. There were 25 members, and they were going through a split, but they all liked him, and they wanted him to be their pastor. And he had already come, after years of being in the Pentecostal denomination, he kind of stumbled on how to teach verse by verse. And so that was happening, and the church was growing some. But what happened with the hippies was when they started letting the hippies in, and when no one else would, that's when this hippie, if you've seen Jesus Revolution, if not, there was this eccentric hippie street preacher that met Chuck Smith, and he kind of was like the evangelist where all these hippies came to be loved and a true revival happened. But before all that happened, Chuck was sitting in his car in Huntington Beach with his wife, just people watching, you know, and he'd see the hippies and kind of like clean the outside of the dish, you know. He'd be thinking, dirty hippies, you know, cut your hair, get a job, take a bath. He'd look over at his wife and she'd be weeping, you know. And so the Lord used all that. And I wonder now, what does that mean for us now, for me, you know, where is the place where I need to go, or the mindset that I need to have with someone who would otherwise be considered just that's beyond reach, you know, they can't be saved. Because remember, if you ever need a refresher on this, just look at Luke 18, right around verse 9. And he's going to get into the short parable of the Pharisee and the tax collector praying in the temple. But Luke introduces this by saying he spoke this parable to those who thought they were righteous on their own and despised others. And so that's a measuring stick for me. Who do I despise out there? You know, the behavior, whatever, you know, immorality. And if I'm despising someone, then that's a way of me thinking, I've arrived, you know, and I haven't arrived. So so picking up from there, find my place, sorry. Yeah, then he kind of just elaborates on that verse 27. Woe to you, scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites! For you are like whitewashed tombs, which indeed appear beautiful outwardly, but inside they are full of dead men's bones and all uncleanness. So when they'd have a feast, people would come from all over the world, Jewish people. And to prepare for that, where there were grave sites, they would whitewash the tombs. Because if someone was traveling to Jerusalem and they accidentally stepped on a tomb, they'd be unclean and then they couldn't participate in the feast and what was going on. So they'd whitewash the tomb but the analogy here, Jesus saying that's the Pharisees. They look good on the outside, but they're, you know, like Jesus says earlier in Matthew, to all of us, that out of the mouth, our flesh, our old nature that we still carry around, out of the mouth, it's not what goes in the mouth. Remember that thing when Peter and they were asking, what do you mean by that? It's not what goes in the mouth that makes someone unclean, but what comes out. It has to do with the heart and all the wicked stuff of our old man or of an unbeliever. It just comes out of their mouth. It's not about how you look on the outside and all that. So now we're in verse 28. We're going to make it through here. Even so, you also outwardly appear righteous to men, but inside are full of hypocrisy and lawlessness. See, Jesus just summed it up in 5-7 words, and I took 28 words, no, 28 sentences. Woe to you, verse 29, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, because you build the tombs of the prophets and adorn the monuments of the righteous and say, if we had lived in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Really hypocritical here. Therefore, you are witnesses against yourselves that you are sons of those who murdered the prophets. Fill up then the measure of your father's guilt. Serpents, brood of vipers, how can you escape the condemnation of hell? And this word hell here and earlier where it's mentioned is Gehenna, which is the lake of fire, which is the second death, which is waiting for anyone who refuses to choose Jesus, which is horrifying to me and you, you know, for anyone to have to go through that. That's why we want to be worker bees, like he prayed, and, you know, until he comes in the spirit, however the Lord works. pray more, love more, rest more, whatever the Lord's calling you to do. But just pray for a revival, because hell is real and heaven is wonderful. And so he's telling them this because they're persecuting him. They will be the ones that are going to manipulate, I guess, Caiaphas, the high priest, into crucifying Jesus just in a few days. They're already plotting to kill him, you know, and they're going to, we'll read on. I think it's on here too. So we're getting here. Verse 34. Therefore, indeed, I send you. And God the Father sent the Son in our parable, but now Jesus, speaking as Jehovah, says, therefore, indeed, I send you prophets, wise men, and scribes. Some of them you will kill and crucify. Some of them you will scourge in your synagogues and persecute from city to city. Of the 12 apostles, 11 of them were martyred, most of them tortured. Peter, the history says he was crucified and upside down, you know, and by choice, but he was crucified, and most of those guys were tortured to death, and all the stuff that's happened between here and now. And if you don't know this, you probably do, but was it the 19th century, there were more people martyred than all of history before that, Christian history. The 20th century, and now we're in the 21st century, and Lori mentioned the equipping the persecuted. Judge Saul's, remember the guy that was here last summer? We learned from him that just in Nigeria, like in the last few years, 80-90% of all martyred Christians is right there in that country. Hold on the government, and they're just going crazy, just wiping out Christians out there. So it's really happening, and we don't know, as long as the Lord tarries, we don't know what our country is going to be, but we just know that He's faithful, and if we have to face that, yet not I, but Christ through me, right, and in me. So we go on from there. We're getting there. Sorry, I just keep losing my place. That on you may come all the right. So this is verse 35. You synagogues and persecute from city to city. Verse 35. That on you may come all the righteous blood shed on the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel to the blood of Zechariah, the son of Berechiah, whom you murdered between the temple and the altar. He's talking to them. They weren't alive, but he's just saying, your people, those same evil people that were Jewish, that were against God's prophets, that's your people, and that's what you're going to do. The blood shed on the earth will be on your hands. If you want, just write Revelation 16, 3 through 7. Revelation 16, 3 through 7. That's where it's the last judgments are the bowls. They get worse and worse and worse. And the second bowl judgment is where they pour out the bowl, and then blood, the waters and the ocean and the rivers, it's all blood. And it says there in that passage that I just gave the reference, it says that's what you're just deserved because you were bloodthirsty. And so now you're going to drink the blood, literally, you know, physically, because you're so bloodthirsty. And so heavy stuff, but we have a brighter ending here to our chapter, thankfully, sadder. So he says in verse 36, assuredly I say to you, all these things will come upon this generation. And remember, this is around 30, whatever, you know, if Jesus was 33, whatever, I don't get how it all works, but this might have been 35 AD or something. By 70 AD, the Romans would destroy Jerusalem and the temple, and over 1 million Jews would be killed, and these people would be wiped out. And so now, and I want to share, we're just going to read that last part, because Jesus now gets tenderhearted. And that's I'm behind, aren't I? No, I'm not. I'm on our last one. The last one, verses 37 through 39, reveal the heart behind the rage. Our God is a lamb. He's as gentle as a lamb. As one pastor put it, you look at Revelation, hide us from the wrath of the lamb. And Damian Kyle, I heard him once say, how bad do you have to be to get a lamb that angry, you know? And that's sin, and that's evil, and that's the heart that will refuse God and only want its own way. And I want to read something, too, from G. Campbell Morgan, a commentary on the whole Bible. So it's just a fairly small book. So each chapter is very short, which is good for a person like me. But this is what he says as we get to this part of the
to Jesus where his compassion comes out towards Jerusalem. I just love the way it reads. Morgan writes this in his commentary. Here indeed, if ever, we have thoughts that breathe and words that burn. One can almost feel the withering force of his strong and mighty indignation. Indignation directed not against the people, but against their false guides. And yet behind it all is his heart. And the woes, quote unquote, merge into a wall of agony, the cry of a mother over her lost child. And that's our Savior. And that's why there is a hell. And that's why there is fury and wrath of God. Because apparently there are people that will never want God, never want his kingdom, never want his way. And they're not safe, you know. And then you read Revelation at the very end. It's very clear. In the end of chapter 21, getting into chapter 22, which is the last book of the Bible. But in chapter 21, it says in verse 24, that in this, you know, beautiful, beautiful, glorious New Jerusalem ascends from heaven on a brand new, a new earth. The old heaven, the old earth have passed away. Beautiful earth. And it says, and the nations of those who are saved shall walk in its light, and the kings of the earth shall bring their glory and honor into it, into the New Jerusalem. Its gates shall not be shut by night, its gates shall not be shut at all by day. I love how John puts in parentheses, there shall be no night there, and they shall bring the glory and honor of the nations into it. Now the next verse, but there shall by no means enter in it anything that defiles or causes an abomination or a lie, or only those who are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And so I understand humanly, how could a God of love allow hell and people to suffer forever? But if you turn that around, to me, when I read even the rich man and Lazarus, that rich man never asks to get out, where he never says, I don't deserve to be here. He only asks for water and go warn my brothers. You think about that. And so God is sovereign, but he gives us a will. And seems to me like people like this would never want God. They'd always be a threat. That being said, we don't know who those people are. So we love everybody and share with everyone, because you don't know who the next Saul of Tarsus is that will become like Paul the Apostle. We need that. We need that. We need a movement like that. I remember thinking about a year ago, Lord, praying, Lord, we need a John the Baptist. We need someone fiery to come, but also loving. And I felt like the Lord said, that's me. Because we see both sides of him, don't we, in this passage. So we wrap up here. Okay. So verse 37, and with he's weeping. You know this in other passages. He's weeping. Oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, one who kills the prophets and stones those who are sent to her. How often I wanted to gather your children together as a hen gathers her chicks under her wings, but you were not willing. See, not I'm this sovereign God who chooses who gets saved and who doesn't. You were not willing. See, your house is left to you desolate. That's what would happen just some 20-some years later. For I say to you, you shall see me no more, here's the hope, till you say, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord. And Zechariah 13 depicts this, and Romans chapter 11 depicts this, and other places. The Lord's going to come back. Zechariah, maybe it's 12, and they'll see him whom they pierced, you know, and they'll mourn for him like one mourns for an only son. And they'll ask him, where did you get these wounds on your shoulders? And I got them in the house of my friends. And they will realize what they did as a people. And Paul says that the Jews, that they rejected him, and they, for by and large, have been rejecting him. But then, like Paul says, blindness in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles have come in, the church gets caught up, and so after that, all Israel will be saved, the remnant. When he comes back, his second coming, and we come with him, the Jews that remain alive there are going to turn to him. So that's the glorious hope. And Lord, thank you for that hope, and hope, not a hope so, but we know so. And thank you also for that great promise that God is not done with the Jew, and he's not through with you. We can cling to your promise that you've begun a work in us, you're going to complete it. So we just thank you and praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.